Business Technology Podcast, brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod, and I'm here with two people again, Candace Jones and Craig Wilson. How's it, guys?
Hey.
Candace, this is your last ever podcast.
It is indeed.
I think we need to organize drinks before you head off.
I think that sounds like a plan, although I think if I get drunk, I'm going to cry, which is probably not going to be a good thing.
Well, we'll make it a departure and a welcome for Craig.
I was going to say, it also means that you risk having me hungover on the first official day.
Yes.
That is the chances we take.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But you're away for a couple of days next week, but we'll do something when you get back for sure.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, big news on the political front this week, not so much on the technology side of things. The election on Wednesday, which I guess had a technology angle to it. I've been following the hashtag LGE results, local government election results, in my tweet deck in the last 2 days, and it's actually been, in my view, the best source of breaking election news.
Absolutely.
Especially around the results and what's happening in the provinces and the different municipalities around the country.
Well, the guys that were sitting at the results centres across the country were live tweeting all the results as they were coming in. I know that the DA was live tweeting the results as well, which was quite fun, and it was an incredible source of information. I couldn't find anything else that kept up with it. I mean, elections.co.za, the IEC's website, there were so many people trying to access it that it just couldn't cope with the
I managed to get onto the election site last night, and the data there is actually pretty good. You can drill right down compared to 2006 and 2011.
The data
right
is incredible.
Ward level, yeah.
But on the election day and yesterday, it was impossible almost to get on there without the site crashing or not working to get the info that you wanted. I mean, now it's fantastic because you can just really download all the information that you want. Including who your ward councillors are and right down to the number of seats and votes that were actually counted in those wards. So it's really cool.
Did you follow any of the election action on Twitter?
Yeah, I've seen quite a bit of it. Obviously, I think, again, the DA have proved themselves the current social media leaders. They seem to have been the most active before, you know, leading up to and during the elections, and now even afterwards in terms of talking about who's winning what and where.
There's no doubt about that. I'd love to see someone do some analysis of what how that active campaign by the DA on social media, on Facebook and Twitter, might have helped them in this campaign, how many votes it might have actually have won them. Or is it just important to be seen to be engaging with the electorate and that sort of thing? Or has it actually translated into votes on the ground?
That would be very interesting. I don't know how possible it will be to translate the actual online campaign to the number of votes that they received. I think that will be a very difficult process, unless of course they got some heavyweight surveys in place. But it was an incredible campaign on their on their behalf. I could never have asked for anything more. I consistently watched their campaign for information and details, and then the results as well. I also want to commend News24 for their election map that they had, which also drilled down into.
It was great.
Unfortunately, they were relying on the elections.co.za site for their details and the information as it was coming in, and because so many people were trying to access that site, they couldn't get. At some point during the day, they had to slow down in their updates.
I noticed it wasn't always completely up to date.
On the map. So unfortunately, it was a good effort. I think that if they'd had someone live at the results centre pumping through the information as it came in to that website, it would have been far more accurate. But I think what a great breakdown, visual breakdown.
Yeah, it was great. You could quickly flip between 2006 and 2011 and see where the results were and the current tally and how many votes had been counted and all that sort of thing. The only thing I didn't like about it was you couldn't drill right down to ward level.
Yeah, that would have been nice. I think perhaps it might be something that they could think about next year, or next elections.
Next election, 2014.
Next year.
General election, 3 years away.
Sure, already. Right.
We don't have to hear from the politicians for 3 years. Isn't that nice?
Yes.
Conversely, I'd be interested to see how many votes were lost, if any, from the DA's aggressive calling and SMSing campaign.
Oh, of course, the SMSing thing, yeah. Did you get any SMSs?
I got two SMSs, and I got a phone call on the landline.
Me too.
Where I must admit I wasn't the friendliest. I contained myself, but I was told it was a courtesy call, and I said that I thought it wasn't very courteous at all to call someone unsolicited, which seemed to stop her dead in her tracks, whoever she was, the DA rep.
Okay, interesting.
But, and two SMSs, one of them in Afrikaans.
Oh. Do you speak Afrikaans?
I do, poorly.
Okay.
I just thought it was interesting, too, that both SMSs were English and Afrikaans, and the second one was predominantly Afrikaans. And well, that was interesting. I wondered what they'd based that decision on, depending where you were.
Yes. I don't know. I mean, I think that I remember being called many years ago, perhaps about a decade ago, by the DA, and they were actually explicitly asked me if I could be included in their electronic communication, cell phone communication. And I said sure. So I was quite surprised to see so many people complaining about getting unsolicited SMS.
Well, I think there was a lot of it was because they were, you know, for a lot of people they were unsolicited. I have no idea how they got my number. Mm. So I mean, obviously, I would get enough SMS spam of different sorts. You know, someone's selling databases and they picked up on one of those. But I certainly didn't give the DA permission to SMS me.
Mm. Well, I was also asked if I could be included on the on their electronic communications list, and I said no. And funnily enough, I haven't received a single SMS or a phone call.
Huh. Interesting. Interesting.
So,
okay. I only received communication from the DA in this election. I didn't receive anything from the ANC, whereas I did from the ANC in the last election.
I have nothing from either of them.
I got 3 SMSs from the DA and a phone call on my cell phone.
Mm.
At 4 o'clock on election day. The person on the call center said, "You do know it's an election day today." So I said, "Yeah, I've just actually got back from the 702 election helicopter." That shut him up pretty quickly. But actually, let me talk a bit about that. I was going to say,
that's got to be the next topic of discussion, right? That was the busiest thing on my Twitter on Wednesday.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Went up with Toby Shapshak from Stuff Magazine and Akiana Stasiu from Talk Radio 702 in the 702 election chopper. That was great fun. We were up there for, about an hour and a half in total. Took off from Rand Airport, flew all over the city from Soweto to Sandton to Northcliffe to... we actually flew over the park here in Northwold. It was great fun, amazingly we were able to check our email and tweet and all the rest of it while flying all around the city, so the coverage up in the air I can report is pretty good.
So clearly your cell phone doesn't have the same issues on navigation to helicopters as it does for airplanes.
Yes, in fact I asked the helicopter pilot Jack when we got on board. I said to him, can we use our phones on the helicopter? And he says, of course you can, this isn't SAA. But it was great being up there actually, and just flying around. We went up, we took off at around half past 12, and there were very few queues, voting queues around Joburg. The longest ones were sort of in the northern suburbs. We flew over Alex and flew over Soweto, and there were no queues at all.
Interesting. Where I was voting, there was a queue a mile long when I...
What time did you vote?
I was there quite early in the morning, from about 7:30.
Okay.
And then in the afternoon, I came back through that way to have a look, and the queues were still as long. So I was quite surprised to hear that some of the stations had very, very short queues.
Yeah. Did you see long queues?
It seemed to vary a lot, and I think depending on the time of day, from what I saw from other people talking about it on Twitter, a lot of them found that if they went in the afternoon, it was dead quiet, but if they went in the morning, they had to queue.
Mm.
I didn't see many problems, no, except for what I saw reported in the media.
I voted at 4:30 at the Bromhof polling station, and I queued for about 15 minutes, but it was fast and efficient. The IEC seemed to be pretty jacked up, although they weren't using those zip machines. I think they had broken.
I think what actually happened was that the paper of the ballot was too thick to fit in some of those machines. I think that was the issue. So they only had that zip machine in some areas. But what I was really impressed with watching the news afterwards and watching the count come in was the live boards, electronic boards that they were showing as the votes were being counted and they would tick over. What an incredible set of technology that they've got going up at the IEC there to count the votes.
Hmm.
I'm really impressed with what...
The IEC did a fine job. I'm just hoping at some point in the future we'll be able to vote on the internet.
I'm not so sure that that's going to happen anytime soon.
Or if necessarily if it's a good idea. Given the experience in the US and...
How many votes can you have?
Clear cookies vote again.
Exactly. Some online competitions. Yeah.
But it wouldn't work in South Africa because we don't have universal access to telecommunications or internet access. But I can imagine in some developed markets that in future you'd be able to hold an election on the internet entirely and the results will be known instantaneously.
Yeah, I think some point that'll happen. They're going to have to find some sort of secure token.
Security is the big concern.
The way to and also to prevent people from voting more than once and that kind of thing. But I think it's going to have to happen eventually.
It makes sense. It just gets the whole... I mean, it's late Friday afternoon while recording this and they still haven't got the final count in.
Well, if you think about it as well, in this electorate, we've had, I think, a 57% turnout for the vote.
Mm.
Over last year's 48% or 42% or something. just imagine how much that would increase if you could do that from the comfort of your own home.
Mm. Maybe the solution in South Africa is to use cell phones, because I mean, just about everybody's got a cell phone. You just send a text message to a free number, and then it texts you back to say thank you for voting.
And using with Rika in place now, that should really increase the security around the cellular vote anyway.
Mm-hmm. Alternatively, of course, in the interim, the other option would be electronic voting booths too, something linked perhaps to fingerprints.
Yeah.
So that votes are counted as and when they're made.
Mm. Yeah. That I think it was those electronic voting booths in the US that
would cause all the problems. Yes. Yes. Yes, with Rika in place, perhaps the cell phone would work, but otherwise, yes. You can imagine loyalists buying many a 99-cent starter pack.
Yes.
I would have.
Cool. Right. Let's get off politics and talk some serious tech now. Vodacom results were on Monday, and we were just actually saying before the show we arrived there dressed fairly formally. You were saying you had your best.
My best dress, my heels, my makeup.
And the Vodacom executives pitched up in jeans.
No ties, no jackets. But I think it was a bold statement by the Vodacom executives. I think that they did it specifically and it was quite choreographed.
It was choreographed to a T.
And so much more effective when everyone else is dressed formally.
Yes. But I think that they're saying that, you know, Vodacom is really serious about changing their image and really making themselves younger, more nimble.
I mean, the message they're clearly trying to send is that the change of the colour to red is just the sort of top of it, and they've actually changed the whole organisation. And Peter spoke about how he moved out of his office to an open plan environment. He spoke about how he's got these TVs in the open plan environment where you can watch all the stores around the country.
He was very anecdotal about that one shop, one of the service centres, which had a really long queue, and he was saying, oh look, business is good today, look at the long queue, until he realised that it was actually a service centre and that long queues is a bad thing. So he sent off one of his managers for that centre to go and fix it. And he says, it worked. The queue disappeared. Yes. Which is quite cute.
So I had a really interesting conversation with Ernest Kaplan, the equities analyst, after the Vodacom results. And he sort of crunched through the numbers and made some interesting observations, pointed out that Vodacom's voice business is really showing signs of maturing now. And they're not really going to be able to count on that for profit and revenue growth into the future. And he suggested that if there's a price war in that space, it actually could actually harm Vodacom and the other mobile operators quite seriously, given that the data revenues haven't yet risen to an extent that they can begin to really offset that voice business.
Well, interestingly, Vodacom was saying that the data business did actually offset some of the voice issues with regards to the low mobile termination rates, which, as you know, came down again at the beginning of April this year, or was it the beginning of March?
Beginning of March.
And last year, same time. And Vodacom was saying that the data business actually did offset some of those issues. Mm. But I agree with Ernest. I think that there is some... there's not much leeway in the voice business anymore, and I don't think that data is bringing in enough revenue to change that. And it's interesting because data also doesn't have quite the margins that the voice business did.
Yeah, that's the thing. And the point Ernest made was he's not sure that the data business will ever generate the sort of profits, the profit margins that the voice business has. And the data business is definitely more competitive if you look at some of the options that are coming out now.
Well, not only are the mobile operators competing with each other in the data business, they're also competing with ADSL and the hundreds of other providers that are out there providing broadband over ADSL. Mm. And let's not even get to the likes of Neotel, who are providing access over CDMA. So
And WiMAX.
And then there's other fiber to the home options coming in, and there's a lot more competition in the broadband space than there is in the voice space. Mm. So, the mobile operators have to really jack their stuff up to get that going.
And it's only going to be a matter of time until some app comes along that does serious damage to them in the voice space. We're really seeing that potential with the application WhatsApp in the SMS market. If you haven't checked it out yet, I think it runs on Android and Symbian and iOS.
And BlackBerry.
It's basically a BBM clone. Mm. It's a way of sending cheap or basically free text messages over your data connection on your cell phone, and really it has the potential to hammer the revenues that operators and the huge margins that operators generate out of SMS.
There definitely is going to come a time when a a voice alternative will come along that will run over data, because data, let's face it, is cheaper.
Yeah, much cheaper. And getting cheaper all the time. What's really interesting, I was chatting to the Virgin Mobile guys over lunch today, and we're talking about the Microsoft Skype deal. Now imagine, and I'm sure this is Microsoft's intention, is to put Skype on every Windows Mobile Phone 7 handset. That's not just Nokia, but Nokia is obviously the biggest handset manufacturer in the world. Can you imagine what the operators are going to make of this when everyone's running Skype on their smartphones?
One way for Windows/Microsoft to make themselves incredibly unpopular with carriers around the world very quickly.
Indeed.
But it's, as you said, it's inevitable. With various sort of voice over IP options coming along, it's only a matter of time before someone creates an app or makes it possible to use Skype on your phone. And I think all the operators need to be aware that data is going to increase exponentially. Whether or not they can turn that into sizable revenue remains to be seen. But data is going to increase exponentially, and voice is going to start falling off.
And this is where this whole dumb pipe a concept comes in, where the operator has potentially just turned into a dumb pipe, and it's other companies like Microsoft and Google and Apple that actually make the money on top of that pipe. And this scares the hell out of the operators.
This begs the question, though, surely the operators then should be thinking about ways of creating a Skype clone for their networks that will work across their networks and to other networks and charge for it.
Yeah, maybe.
Keep voice and data.
Yeah, maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if they're thinking that way, but it's certainly not something they'd want to introduce and start marketing actively.
Not anytime soon. No,
because you want to ride the voice wave for as long as it lasts.
Yes.
But I agree with Candace. If you can get ahead of that's what the criticism leveled at Microsoft has been, is that they've fallen so far behind the curve that now they're forced to play catch-up. And mobile operators face exactly the same challenges if they don't keep up with the fact that data is liable to replace voice.
I mean, do they hold off on development of a product like that so that they can milk their voice revenues for as long as possible, or do they bring it into the market now in the hope that it's going to gain traction in the market before Microsoft or someone similar comes along with a Skype-like product and takes the market from them?
Perhaps take a market cap knock, build the product, keep it on the back burner until something comes along that could prove to be explosive and introduce your own product.
If you were Peter Ace, what would you do? Would you release a product that's going to cannibalize your voice revenues?
I'd retire and move to an island.
Join Google.
Perhaps not release, but have it ready.
Have it ready. I don't know. I think they're in a tough, tough situation because they want to, and they have to milk the revenues that they're getting at the moment, and they're still riding a strong wave. I mean, voice is not going anywhere anytime soon.
You're right, but it is a matter of time. I mean, we saw what happened with Mixit and how the explosive growth of that enjoyed the millions of consumers, especially youngsters who use Mixit. The same thing will happen with voice at some point. Someone's going to come up with an app, whether it's Microsoft or someone else, that's going to cannibalize that voice market.
And I mean, WhatsApp is just another example of that, and it's doing so well. I mean, I don't know anybody at the moment who's not on WhatsApp.
Well, I was going to say, I have to see if it's available for barter.
probably not.
No, probably not. That's been the general rule when I've looked for anything, yeah.
Sorry for you.
Why don't you put Android on that phone?
I'm going to look into it, yeah. At the moment, I can't even update it.
We know a couple of guys who could probably root it for you.
Stephen from Worldwide Works. The first thing he does when he gets a new phone is roots it and installs the latest bleeding edge version of Android.
Brave man.
Yeah.
I'm worried about security.
Yeah. My HTC Desire is coming to the end of its, I'm due for an upgrade soon. So I think, once I've got just a couple of weeks left, I'm going to get Stephen to hack the thing and put honeycomb or something on it.
Probably a good idea.
Well, I'm sure honeycomb is designed for smartphones. It's a tablet. Maybe put what's that latest one? 2.4 ice cream sandwich. Ice cream sandwich on it. One of the dev releases of that.
That made me hungry.
But the ice cream sandwiches. it really leaves this point. Now, I had a fascinating interview with Stafford Marcy, who's the ex-country manager for Google and now an entrepreneur and angel investor in the tech space. He's been doing quite a bit of consulting with banks and with mobile companies. And his view is that they kind of missed a bit of a trick here because the pendulum swung away from voice to data, and they've missed this huge opportunity for for making revenues out of transactions on the mobile phone. And he thinks near-field communications, which is this kind of like Bluetooth type technology, if you like, it's going to facilitate transactions at the point of sale on your mobile device. He thinks that could be the next big opportunity for mobile operators. But that, he believes, will then necessarily put mobile operators in direct competition with the banks for the first time.
Well, I mean, they're already on their way there. You look at all the mobile money services that are available on all the South African operators.
But they're all working with banks at the moment.
But they're all working with the banks at the moment. But how soon will it be before they actually approach the banking services and ask for a license for themselves? I mean, I know that you did a really in-depth story on Vodacom's M-Pesa and their results here in South Africa, and they've been very disappointing.
M-Pesa, of course, is the mobile money system, mobile transfer money system that's been a massive success in Kenya and now in a couple of other markets as well, including Tanzania. Well, but it hasn't taken off yet.
The reason it's taken off so well in places like Tanzania and Kenya is because they're far less regulated in terms of financial space.
And they don't really have banks.
They don't really have banks, and that's just it, is that the mobile operators picked up the phone and said, okay, great, you guys have a chance here, you can send money this way.
Yes.
They have very few banking legislations. In South Africa, it's very difficult, and it's, you know, you have to go through a bank, whereas in Kenya you don't. So it makes a lot more sense for the Kenyans to pick this up and use it, because they're losing less money in transfer when they hand it over to a taxi driver to take it across Kenya to another guy. You know, that guy's going to steal 10 bucks or 13 bucks or 15 bucks off the 20 rand that he's already taken to the family member. So now they've got a real secure way of doing it. Mobile phones in Kenya, as you know, have exploded, and they've got a secure way that doesn't eat into the amount that they're sending as much as it would if they were to do it in a manual way. In South Africa, it's not so easy, because there's no real way to do it without actually having to transact through the bank. And that sort of has been less appealing to the mass market, because, again, a chunk gets taken out of whatever it is you're sending. So it's difficult for...
It's got the transaction rate can't be, has to be very, very small.
It has to be.
Someone made the point that Safaricom, which owns M-Pesa and Vodacom, sister company in Kenya, doesn't view M-Pesa as a profit-making opportunity. It views it as a means of attracting loyalty to the Safaricom network.
It's more as a value-added service.
It's not something they actually explicitly go out there to try and profit from, whereas M-Pesa in South Africa, Vodacom, is explicitly trying to profit from it.
I think there's been massive profits for mobile money across the continent, which is why I think Vodacom is thinking, okay, now we can try it here and try and make profits out of it. But perhaps that is the wrong view of it.
I hear, and I haven't confirmed this, but I hear that Vodacom actually did get a banking license directly, but it wasn't denied to them, but the registrar of banks kindly asked them not to push the matter, because it had just, you know, the time they were seeking the license was when the bottom had just fallen out the market and the global financial crisis had hit. They were apparently quite keen to get their own license, ended up partnering with Nedbank. But what one wonders how long, I mean, this is speculation, but one wonders how long that relationship with Nedbank is going to last before Vodacom actually does go out again and ask for its own banking license to do this itself directly.
Well, the economy is recovering, so there's every possibility that it could go out there and do it. And perhaps that's the best way to approach it. But again, if they're looking to make massive profits out of it, perhaps it's not the approach that they need to take. But I don't know. I mean, it's one of the areas that Africa and African operators have excelled in innovation is in the mobile money space.
Yes.
So it would be interesting to see a case study of how it's worked in other countries and why it's not working as well in South Africa. I mean, the other mobile operators, or at least MTN, has its own version, which also hasn't done as sterlingly well as some would have hoped.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see what MTN's results say about their own financial stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Cool, we have to take a quick break. We'll be back right after these messages.
The Vox Superphone and your ADSL line go together like movies and popcorn.
Shh.
But you can talk. Now you can use your ADSL for more than just surfing. With the Superphone, you can call any phone, anywhere, using your ADSL line. You save money, earn rebates, and Vox-to-Vox calls are free. No contracts, just plug and play. Your ADSL and the Vox Superphone. It's the perfect combination. Make the most of your ADSL. Visit voxsuperphone.co.za.
After the advent of the telephone, it took mankind 70 years to invent the color television. And yet, it only took the next 23 years to invent lasers. The internet, to put a man on the moon. Ignition sequence start. It begs the question, what will the business world be like in the next 23 years? Wherever your business is at, Telkom Business will be there with you. Telkom Business.
Virtual Access, ECN's latest cost-saving telecom service. Virtual Access is a single 0860 number, providing your customers with national access to your company, no matter how many branches you have or where your customers are calling from. If you are currently using or plan to use an 0860 number, you need to talk to ECN. Virtual Access is the best price single national number offering in the market. For more, visit ecntelecoms.com. ECN, lowering the cost of doing business.
Welcome back to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Craig Wilson and Candace Jones. How's it, guys? So staying with mobile, I do want to quiz keen. I had lunch today with Steve Bailey, the CEO of Virgin Mobile South Africa, and interesting little company. They've now got over 300,000 customers. He admitted that they've been, from next month, they'll have been in the market for 5 years. He admitted that they did come to market and made quite a number of mistakes. Says they've now resolved those issues. Cell C is sold out. Virgin Mobile is now a majority shareholder with a 55% stake. And a company called Calico Investments has taken the other 45%. They're aligned to Allied Mobile, which is a big but very quiet cell phone distributor.
Yeah, KGO.
Okay,
I haven't really been able to get
hold of them I think they deliberately keep below the profile because they are a big cell phone distributor, and they move a lot of expensive equipment around, and they don't really want to put their head above the parapet because they do have the potential to be victims of crime.
I suppose I would too.
Yeah, so fair enough. Interesting chat with Steve, talking about how they're planning to tackle this market. They've just launched their first prepaid per second billing. We were talking about per second billing in the show last week and suggesting why didn't all the operators offer this. I know I got a call from someone at Telkom that was a bit irate with me for he perceived that we were picking on ATA in particular, but we weren't. We were really being critical of the fact that their per minute billing options right across the market. We think that for consumer simplicity, it should really be per second.
Across all of them.
Yeah.
Any provider that has per minute billing is I think, being disingenuous. They really should go back to per second billing.
Yeah, but so they've come in with some pretty amazing rates. They're offering, similar in a way to ATA, in that they're offering these sort of value add bonuses on top. For example, when someone calls you, if you've got an ATA phone and someone calls you, you then get a percentage of that time to call out again in airtime. Now they're doing something similar. For every 30 rand of airtime that you use, they give you 10 rand.
Which is nice.
While it's not a direct price cut, it's indirect and really works into the system. So what you're looking at is they've cut effectively, if you include that discount, their per minute rate on their per second packages is below 2 rand a minute for peak time and below 1 rand a minute for off peak.
Which isn't bad.
Yeah, so prices are coming down. They're a feisty little company, and I think they struggle because they don't have the marketing muscle of companies like ATA and Cell C and MTN and Vodacom. But if they come to market with clever products, at the right prices, they probably have a space that they can play, a niche they can fill.
Of course they do. What I think would be really interesting for Virgin now is for them to release their data products and have a look at the data side of things, because I think that's I think the voice business now. Vodacom saturated, MTN's reaching its peak, and Cell C has already aggressively moved into the data space. I think that they're going to have to start playing in data if they really want to play a niche, even if they want to play a niche game now. It's important.
Of course, they piggyback on Cell C's network. They're an MVNO on Cell C's network, and they recently got access to Cell C's new 3G HSPA Plus infrastructure, so they can offer 3G services. And Steve did hint to me strongly that they've got data bundles and USB dongles coming in the next few months.
Fantastic.
They do need to come up with something there. They say they've got the cheapest out-of-bundle rate in the market of 60 cents a megabyte. So if you're a prepaid user, you pay 60 cents, where I think the other operators are rand or 2 rand still.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And I think that is too high if you're a big data user. So if you want to plug a Virgin Mobile device into an iPad, for example, and you get through a gigabyte of data, that's 600 Rand. Whereas on Vodacom, MTN and Cell C, you're paying 149 Rand for 2 gig of data.
Mm.
So it is pricey for if you use a lot of data, but if you just use a tiny, we don't know what sort of churn that is involved in. We don't know what sort of revenue they're generating from each of those users.
And what kind of users are they? Are they the upper market users that they're looking for, or are they the lower market users?
We don't know. But we'll know in about a month when Telkom releases its results, and we'll have to analyze those ARPU and churn numbers to see whether these are sort of customers that they want to be adding to their network or not.
Look, a customer is a customer. And you know, the more customers they have, even if they are low-end customers, at least they've got them. That's money coming in and the network being used, which is needed.
That's true, but you know, you don't want your customer to spend too little, because then it becomes an unprofitable customer.
Sure.
I mean, the target you really want, which is Virgin Mobile has been really successful, is they've most of their base is contract.
Which is incredible.
Those are the guys who spend a lot more, so...
But they only offered contracts right in the beginning. That's when true. They launched.
Just the inverse of Eta's offering, really.
Yeah.
They pushed the prepaid hardest.
Yes.
Clearly going for the lower end of the market as opposed to contract users. It's interesting then, it'd be interesting to see what percentage of those 300,000 Virgin Mobile users are contract users.
Mm.
Because also, in fairness, it's quite astounding, really, that a company could hang around for 5 years with... only 300,000 subscribers, so hopefully they have something big up their sleeves.
Mm. Bear in mind that they have no overheads for network, so they have to pay for the network that they use for Cell C, but they have no real overheads for that.
Sure.
Of their own. They're not having to expand all the time, and they're not having to invest all the time, so that does take a chunk out of the financials that they need to bring a proper MVNO to the country. So, you know, it's not... I'm not sure that 300,000 is enough, but I'm not sure that it's too little either.
The other interesting thing as Steve Bailey said to me was that the cut in wholesale termination rates, which in English means the fees that operators charge each other to terminate calls between each other's networks, those are coming down over a glide path period. And he says that reduction is helping them a great deal. It's allowing them to come up with innovative new products, and he thinks that the lowering in the termination rate is actually going to allow and entice new virtual mobile operators to come into the South African market.
And there are already rumors of
guys looking at this space. I mean, there's been a rumor around for quite a while that Kalula, the airline, is potentially interested in launching a mobile virtual network operator, and I've heard other names as well. So
I think they were really initially looking at it in 2007 with actual serious intention to do it. Yeah, and then now again, maybe
it's going to make more sense now with that those wholesale rates are coming down.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, it does make sense. I mean, if more people are phoning from Virgin to other operators, they're going to be paying more to the other operators to terminate, whereas they're getting less revenue because fewer people are phoning Virgin to terminate calls on their network, their virtual network. So they'll pay less now to the other operators, and they'll be able to have a little bit more leeway for product development.
But having a bunch of MVNOs like we've got in the UK, for example, in the US coming into this market could certainly change the dynamics of the market, and you know, the guys are going to... I mean, the real opportunity for MVNOs is to come in with coming in with the lowest prices, but actually coming in with the best service.
I think service, and I think providing a niche offering. I think that's where something like Red Bull Mobile came in with a good idea. I don't know how well it's doing.
They're not an MVNO, of course. I mean, Cell C is running that for them.
Sure. But they have a value proposition, and I think if you bring in a value proposition as an MVNO, I know that some of the most profitable ones in the States are aimed at church communities. So they only have like 2,000 or 3,000 people on their network, but they make a good profit because they give and they add value to what they're doing. So you phone freely between your church members. Then you get free godlike SMSs every so often.
I was about to say you get SMSs from godlike SMSs.
And they're actually doing really well. So if you bring in an interesting value proposition, I think as an MVNO, that might be a good starting point. You don't necessarily have to come in with the lowest rates. I think that's the job of the mobile network operators.
Yeah.
But we'll see what comes, because I think it'll be really exciting.
Yeah. Cool. Something that came out of the Vodacom results presentation this week. In fact, it didn't. It was Peter Ace was talking about it, but insinuating it. But Vodafone in the UK announced this week that they're bringing out something called the Vodafone Smart, which is I think the first sub $130 Android smartphone. Built by a Chinese company, probably someone like ZTE or Huawei. But Peter was talking about the price of these Android smartphones coming down to under $100 in the next few months. Quite exciting, actually, I think, because this is potentially going to drive data adoption and internet access in the mass market, which we haven't seen yet.
Well, I think it's so important. And I mean, South Africa and Africa in general have needed something at the low end of the market that they can really get their teeth into. Having access to the internet on your cell phone has become a really good tool for a lot of the lower end market users at the moment, specifically in South Africa, who are using whatever internet they can get their hands on their phones. And having access to, say, for example, the Android marketplace, I mean, Google's marketplace, what an incredible thing. What you could do as someone in the rural areas, for example, trying to sell your additional cabbages that you grew in your backyard. There's so much option available if you can get onto the internet.
That's true. Yeah, we've seen it in Kenya. I mean, a lot of the farmers, rural farmers in Kenya, have been using SMS, just basic SMS, to trade and to check prices in other markets. In fact, it's not just Kenya. There was a fascinating piece, I think, in either Time magazine or Newsweek a few months ago, where they actually looked at a bunch of African countries and how small traders and farmers, etc., are able to use cell phone technology for the first time to check market prices and know where to sell their goods and services. And it's actually really facilitating a free enterprise.
Well, there's that famous story about the fishermen on the African coast who SMS each of the ports to see what the prices are at for fish at that particular point.
Same idea, yeah.
So they don't have to go up and down and check each price, and they don't lose as much fish because they're not spending so much time on the water, which is fantastic. I mean, the having access to the internet could only boost that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking of the internet, is there another bubble emerging? That's the big question on everyone's lips at the moment. I see The Economist this week had a cover story on it, last week rather, had a cover story on it suggesting that there is evidence of irrational exuberance, as Alan Greenspan.
Well, the most recent example, Craig knows quite a lot about at the moment, so the whole LinkedIn IPO, what happened there?
They opened a trading yesterday at $45 a share, and by close of business it was hovering somewhere around 98.
Wow.
So, of course, a lot of analysts going, well, we'll need to give it a few weeks to let it stabilize, and perhaps a little bit of initial irrational
exuberance. Do you know what market cap that gave them at $98?
I don't know.
No.
It's quite a large one, I assume.
It was in the... I don't want to lie to you. I feel like it was in the $10 billion...
Was it that high? Okay, overheard a figure of $6 billion this morning. But even that is, I mean, it's incredible.
I seem to be hearing 10 because they were saying that it was hovering around $100 a share. And as they'd originally punted it at... originally, they were actually meant to go in at about $30 a share. And then they went in at 45. So at the 30, they were initially valuing the market cap at around $3 or $4 billion.
Okay.
Now they're talking as high as 10. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, LinkedIn is a revenue generator. It does
it's
have
a profit generator.
That is a good question.
you see, the last .com bubble, that's the critical part.
That was the problem. Yes.
Clearly, this is why I don't invest. it's interesting to see because there's a couple of businesses that you know, back in the day, launched like that with this explosive open day, stayed up for a couple of months, and then the .com bubble hit and everybody just crashed. So
petfood.com, pets.com. Most infamous example.
It's just, we spoke about it not too long ago.
Yeah, we did.
Podcast.
We spoke about Ariba, the business-to-business e-commerce company that never made a cent and had a market capitalization of $100 billion.
I mean, I'd love to see what Twitter will open at if it goes public.
Yeah.
Because that's a business that's had millions plowed into it.
Yeah.
It has yet to make a cent.
Yeah. You know those big electronic boards they've got at the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ?
Yeah.
Instead of running the numbers, they should put a big fail whale up there.
I think that's the other interesting thing about the LinkedIn IPO is seeing what happens with the rest of the big social media. Wait to see if there is a bubble and if it's going to burst.
Yeah, yeah. The question is there a bubble inflating in the tech sector again? My reading of it is there isn't, but in social media specifically, there may be. If you look at the valuations of companies like Intel and Apple and Cisco and Microsoft and all these things, they're actually not expensive at all.
Well, no, especially because they're moving, they're still largely moving physical product. Or they're moving something tangible that you can actually track. But I agree, the valuations of social media sites, you wonder where they pull the numbers a lot of the times, because especially in terms of users don't denote revenue on so many of them. Mm. You know, with many of them, it doesn't matter how many users you have. That doesn't mean you're actually making any money off them.
Mm. Mm, good point. Yeah, there's also, it seems to be perhaps a bit of a bubble, and I mean, there's only one example of this, so perhaps it's not fair to call it a bubble, but the Huffington Post acquisition by America Online almost suggests that there may be the bubble emerging in online media as well.
Wow.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Quick, list. I see it as well. I agree that yes, there is only one example, but I think that there are a couple of spaces now. If you take, for example, a company like Engadget, and if they went public, I think that they would explode as well. I think they would explode as a share price.
Yeah.
And
But they've already snapped up by AOL, so that's not going to happen. But
Are they owned by AOL?
Yeah, they're owned by AOL. Yeah, AOL bought them.
But there are a couple of other places that are looking quite powerful as well. But
GigaOm.
The value of online media is really the advertising space and the eyeballs.
Yeah.
And I think that's it's the same with social media. It's also the eyeballs. It's exactly where it's at. So.
But the question is, just shouldn't they then be these companies being shouldn't they be valued like media companies rather than enjoying some other sort of metric? I mean, media companies traditionally have not traditionally enjoyed particularly high ratings.
No, they haven't.
Shouldn't they be attracting the same sort of ratings as, you know, the New York Times? Or?
Well, the New York Times only now has a global audience, but back in the day when it started, it only had the audience of New York and those lucky few that came to visit. So, you know, now online media has global audience no matter where you are. You know, it's just a mouse pick away. So there is a bigger value in that.
The thing is trying to figure out how to monetize all these eyeballs.
Yeah, how do you monetize an eyeball from New York to South Africa?
Which, funny enough, is the phrase that everyone was using back in 2000. It's all about monetizing eyeballs.
And really?
Yeah, that was the phrase everyone was using for the big crunch game.
Oh dear, drawing too many parallels.
.com 2.0.
Let's just say the nice thing about history is we get to recognize our mistakes when we make them again.
Yes, and again, and again, and again. Cool, we've run over time. I think we need to call it there. Candice, we're going to miss you on the show.
We're going to miss the show.
But stay in touch, and let's get you on occasionally.
Well, I'll be around, and I'll be happy to come on, and as long as you don't try and make me spill secrets, I'm happy.
Of course we will. But Craig, you've kindly agreed to join us here next Friday, so it'll be the two of us holding the fort together. And Craig, you're going to be in charge of editing this monstrosity.
Yes, so that's the rest of this afternoon's job.
Good luck with that.
And well, let's hope that we are here next week. According to some billboards I've seen, tomorrow's the big day.
Oh, the rapture,
so
yes.
So if not, sorry, this was our last podcast. Hope you liked it.
Yes.
I heard an interview on these guys on the radio the other day, and the DJ actually challenged the leader of the rapture group to sponsor for every one of the group to sponsor an African kid for a year if the world is still here on the 22nd, and he declined.
Huh?
He said, no, we can't do that.
No courage to his convictions.
No courage whatsoever.
Yeah. But I was saying to you, Candice, earlier, actually, that it's definitely Judgment Day tomorrow because the Bulls are playing the Sharks at King's Park.
True story.
That's where the real action's going to be.
Have that beer ready.
For sure. Cool. Let's call it there. If you've got any feedback on the show, as always, you can email us at info@techcentral.co.za. Until next week, cheers.